Death looked at him for a long time. Mort shifted uneasily from one foot to the other. "Absolutely correct," snapped Death. "Clarity of thought, realistic approach, very important in a job like ours."
"Yes, sir."
"Sir?"
Death was struggling with the index.
"People die all the time, sir, don't they? Millions. You must be very busy, but..."
Death gave Mort the look he was coming to be familiar with. It started off as blank surprise, flickered briefly towards annoyance, called in for a drink at recognition, and settled finally on vague forbearance.
"But?"
"I'd have thought you'd have been, well, out and about a bit more, you know, stalking the streets. My granny's almanac's got a picture of you with a scythe and stuff."
"I see. I'm afraid it is hard to explain unless you know about point incarnation and node focusing. I don't expect you do."
"I don't think I do."
"Generally, I'm only expected to make an actual appearance on special occasions."
"Like a king, I suppose," said Mort. "I mean, a king is reigning even when he's doing something else, or asleep even. Is that it, sir?"
"It'll do," said Death, rolling up the maps. "And now, boy, if you've finished the stable, you can go and see if Albert has any jobs he wants doing. If you like, you can come out on the round with me this evening." Mort nodded. Death went back to his big leather book, took up a pen, stared at it for a moment, and then looked up at Mort with his skull on one side. "Have you met my daughter?" he said.
Yes, sir," said Mort, his hand on the doorknob.
"She is a very pleasant girl," said Death, "but I think she quite likes having someone of her own age around to talk to."
"Sir?"
"And, of course, one day all this will belong to her."
Something like a small blue supernova flared for a moment in the depths of his eye sockets. It dawned on Mort that, with some embarrassment and complete lack of expertise, Death was trying to wink. In a landscape that owed nothing to time and space, which appeared on no map, which existed only in those far reaches of the multiplexed cosmos, known to the few astrophysicists who have taken really bad acid, Mort spent the afternoon helping Albert plant out broccoli. It was black, tinted with purple.
"He tries, see," said Albert, flourishing the dibber. "It's just that when it comes to colour, he hasn't got much imagination."
"I'm not sure I understand all this," said Mort. "Did you say he made all this?"
Beyond the garden wall, the ground dropped towards a deep valley and then rose into dark moorland that marched all the way to distant mountains, jagged as cat's teeth.
"Yeah," said Albert. "Mind what you're doing with that watering can."
"What was here before?"
"I dunno," said Albert, starting a fresh row. "Firmament, I suppose. That's the fancy name for all nothing. It's not a very good job of work, to tell the truth. I mean, the garden's okay, but the mountains are downright shoddy. They're all fuzzy when you get up close. I went and had a look once."
Mort squinted hard at the trees nearest him. They seemed commendably solid.
"What'd he do it all for?" he said.
Albert grunted.
"Do you know what happens to lads who ask too many questions?"
Mort thought for a moment. "No," he said eventually.
"What?"
There was silence. Then Albert straightened up and said,
"Damned if I know. Probably they get answers, and serve 'em right."
"He said I could go out with him tonight," said Mort.
"You're a lucky boy then, aren't you?" said Albert vaguely, heading back for the cottage.
"Did he really make all this?" said Mort, tagging along after him.
"Yes."
"Why?"
"I suppose he wanted somewhere where he could feel at home."
"Are you dead, Albert?"
"Me? Do I look dead?"
The old man snorted when Mort started to give him a slow, critical look.
"And you can stop that. I'm as alive as you are, probably more."
"Sorry."
"Right."
Albert pushed open the back door and turned to regard Mort as kindly as he could manage.
"It's best not to ask all these questions," he said. "It upsets people. Now, how about a nice fry-up?"
The bell rang while they were playing dominoes. Mort sat to attention.
"He'll want the horse made ready," said Albert. "Come on."
They went out to the stable in the gathering dusk, and Mort watched the old man saddle up Death's horse.
"His name's Binky," said Albert, fastening the girth. "It just goes to show you never can tell."
Binky tried to eat his scarf in an affectionate way. Mort remembered the woodcut in his grandmother's almanac between the page on planting times and the phases of the moon section, showing Deathy the great leveler comes to Ali Menne. He'd stared at it hundreds of times when learning his letters. It wouldn't have been half so impressive if it had been generally known that the flame-breathing horse the Spectre rode was called Binky.
"I would have thought something like Fang, or Sabre, or Ebony," Albert continued, "but the master will have his little fancies, you know. Looking forward to it, are you?"
"I think so," said Mort uncertainly. "I've never seen Death actually at work."
"Not many have," said Albert. "Not twice, at any rate."
Mort took a deep breath. "About this daughter of his," he began.
"Ah, good evening, Albert, boy."
"Mort," said Mort automatically. Death strode into the stable, stooping a little to clear the ceiling. Albert nodded, not in any subservient way, Mort noticed, but simply out of form. Mort had met one or two servants on the rare occasions he'd been taken into town. Albert wasn't like any of them. He seemed to act as though the house really belonged to him and its owner was just a passing guest, something to be tolerated like peeling paintwork or spiders in the lavatory. Death put up with it too, as though he and Albert had said everything that needed to be said a long time ago and were simply content now to get on with their jobs with the minimum of inconvenience all round. To Mort, it was rather like going for a walk after a really bad thunderstorm. Everything was quite fresh, nothing was particularly unpleasant, but there was the sense of vast energies just expended. Finding out about Albert tagged itself onto the end of his list of things to do.
"Hold this," said Death, and pushed a scythe into his hand while he swung himself up onto Binky.
The scythe looked normal enough, except for the blade. It was so thin that Mort could see through it, a pale blue shimmer in the air that could slice flame and chop sound. He held it very carefully.
"Right, boy," said Death. "Come on up. Albert, don't wait up."
The horse trotted out of the courtyard and into the sky. There should have been a flash or rush of stars. The air should have spiralled and turned into speeding sparks, such as normally happens in the common everyday transdimensional hyperjumps. But this was Death, who has mastered the art of going everywhere without ostentation and could slide between dimensions as easily as he could slip through a locked door. And they moved at an easy gallop through cloud canyons, past great billowing mountains of cumulus, until the wisps parted in front of them and the disk lay below, basking in sunlight.
"That's because time is adjustable," said Death, when Mort pointed this out. "It's not really important."
"I always thought it was."
"People think it's important only because they invented it," said Death somberly.
Mort considered this rather trite, but decided not to argue.
"What are we going to do now?" he said.
"There's a promising war in Clachistan," said Death. "Several plague outbreaks, one rather important assassination, if you'd prefer."
"What, a murder?"
"Aye, a king."
"Oh, kings," said Mort dismissively. He knew about kings. Once a year a band of strolling players, or at any rate ambling ones, came to Sheepridge, and the plays they performed were invariably about kings. Kings were always killing one another, or being killed. The plots were quite complicated, involving mistaken identity, poisons, battles, long-lost sons, ghosts, witches, and usually lots of daggers. Since it was clear that being a king was no picnic, it was amazing that half the cast were apparently trying to become one. Mort's idea of palace life was a little hazy, but he imagined that no one got much sleep.
"I'd quite like to see a real king," he said. "They wear crowns all the time, my granny said, even when they go to the lavatory."
Death considered this carefully.
"There's no technical reason why not," he conceded. "In my experience, however, it is generally not the case."
The horse wheeled, and the vast flat checkerboard of the Stow Plain sped underneath them at lightning speed. This was rich country, full of silt and rolling cabbage fields, and neat little kingdoms whose boundaries wriggled like snakes as small, formal wars, marriage pacts, complex alliances, and the occasional bit of sloppy cartography changed the political shape of the land.
"This king," said Mort,
as a forest zipped beneath them.
"Is he good or bad?"
"I never concern myself with such things," said Death. "He's no worse than any other king, I imagine."
"Does he have people put to death?" said Mort, and remembering who he was talking to, added, "saving your honor's presence, of course."
"Sometimes. There are some things you have to do when you're a king."
A city slid below them, clustered around a castle built on a rock outcrop that poked up out of the plain like a geological pimple. It was one huge rock from the distant ramtops, Death said, left there by the retreating ice in the legendary days when the ice giants waged war on the gods and rode their glaciers across the land in an attempt to freeze the whole world. They'd given up in the end, however, and driven their great glittering flocks back to their hidden lands amongst the razorbacked mountains near the hub. No one on the plains knew why they'd done this. It was generally considered by the younger generation in the city of Stow Lart, the city around the rock, that this was because the place was dead boring. Binky trotted down over nothingness and touched down on the flagstones of the castle's topmost tower. Death dismounted and told Mort to sort out the nosebag.
"Won't people notice there's a horse up here?" he said, as they strolled to a stairwell.
Death shook his head.
"Would you believe there could be a horse at the top of this tower?" he said.
"No, you couldn't get one up the stairs," said Mort.
"Well, then..."
"Oh, I see. People don't want to see what can't possibly exist."
"Well done."
Now they were walking away along a wide corridor hung with tapestries. Death reached into his robe and pulled out an hourglass, peering closely at it in the dim light. It was a particularly fine one, its glass cut into intricate facets and imprisoned in an ornate framework of wood and brass. The words, "King Olav the Bastard," were engraved deeply into it. The sand inside sparkled oddly. There wasn't a lot left. Death hummed to himself and stowed the glass away in whatever mysterious recess it had occupied. They turned a corner and hit a wall of sound. There was a hall full of people there, under a cloud of smoke and chatter that rose all the way up into the banner-haunted shadows in the roof. Up in a gallery, a trio of minstrels were doing their best to be heard and not succeeding. The appearance of Death didn't cause much of a stir. A footman by the door turned to him, opened his mouth, and then frowned in a distracted way and thought of something else. A few courtiers glanced in their direction, their eyes instantly unfocusing as common sense overruled the other five.
"We've got a few minutes," said Death, taking a drink from a passing tray. "Let's mingle."
"They can't see me either," said Mort, "but I'm real."
"Reality is not always what it seems," said Death. "Anyway, if they don't want to see me, they certainly don't want to see you. These are aristocrats, boy. They're good at not seeing things. Why is there a cherry on a stick in this drink?"
"Mort," said Mort automatically.
"It's not as if it does anything for the flavour. Why does anyone take a perfectly good drink and then put in a cherry on a pole?"
"What's going to happen next?" said Mort.
An elderly earl bumped into his elbow, looked everywhere but directly at him, shrugged, and walked away.
"Take these things now," said Death, fingering a passing canapé. "I mean, mushrooms, yes. Chicken, yes. Cream, yes. I've nothing against any of them, but why in the name of sanity mince them all up and put them in little pastry cases?"
"Pardon?" said Mort.
"That's mortals for you," Death continued. "They've only got a few years in this world, and they spend them all in making things complicated for themselves. Fascinating. Have a gherkin."
"Where's the king?" said Mort, craning to look over the heads of the court.
"Chap with the golden beard," said Death.
He tapped a flunky on the shoulder, and as the man turned and looked around in puzzlement, deftly piloted another drink from his tray. Mort cast around until he saw the figure standing in a little group in the centre of the crowd, leaning over slightly the better to hear what a rather short courtier was saying to him. He was a tall, heavily built man, with the kind of stolid, patient face that one would confidently buy a used horse from.
"He doesn't look like a bad king," said Mort. "Why would anyone want to kill him?"
"See the man next to him, with the little moustache and the grin like a lizard?" Death pointed with his scythe.
"Yes."
"His cousin, the Duke of Stow Helit. Not the nicest of people," said Death. "A handy man with a bottle of poison. Fifth in line to the throne last year, now second in line. Bit of a social climber, you might say."
He fumbled inside his robe and produced an hourglass in which black sand coursed between a spiked iron latticework. He gave it an experimental shake.
"And due to live another 30-35 years, he said with a sigh.
"And he goes around killing people," said Mort. He shook his head. "There's no justice."
Death sighed. "No," he said, handing his drink to a page who was surprised to find he was suddenly holding an empty glass. "There's just me."
He drew his sword, which had the same ice-blue shadow-thin blade as the scythe of office, and stepped forward.
"I thought you used the scythe," whispered Mort.
"Kings get the sword," said Death. "It's a royal what's-a-name, prerogative."
His free hand thrust its bony digits beneath his robe again and brought out King Olerv's glass. In the top half, the last few grains of sand were huddling together.
"Pay careful attention," said Death. "You may be asked questions afterwards."
"Wait," said Mort wretchedly. "It's not fair. Can't you stop it?"
"Fair?" said Death. "Who said anything about fair?"
"Well, if the other man is such a..."
"Listen," said Death. "Fair doesn't come into it. You can't take sides. Good grief, when it's time, it's time. That's all there is to it, boy."
"Mort," moaned Mort, staring at the crowd.
And then he saw her. A random movement in the people opened up a channel between Mort and a slim, red-haired girl seated among a group of older women behind the king. She wasn't exactly beautiful, being over-endowed in the freckle department, and frankly rather on the skinny side. But the sight of her caused a shock that hot-wired Mort's hindbrain and drove it all the way to the pit of his stomach, laughing nastily.
"It's time," said Death, giving Mort a nudge with a sharp elbow. "Follow me."
Death walked toward the king, weighing his sword in his hand. Mort blinked and started to follow. The girl's eyes met him for a second and immediately looked away, then swiveled back, dragging her head around, her mouth starting to open in an O of horror. Mort's backbone melted. He started to run towards the king.
"Look out!" he screamed. "You're in great danger!"
And the world turned into treacle. It began to fill up with blue and purple shadows, like a heat-stroke dream, and sound faded away until the roar of the court became distant and scritchy, like the music in someone else's headphones. Mort saw Death standing companionably by the king, his eyes turned up towards the minstrel gallery. Mort saw the bowman, saw the bow, saw the bolt now winging through the air at the speed of a sick snail. Slow as it was, he couldn't outrun it. It seemed like hours before he could bring his leaden legs under control, but finally he managed to get both feet to touch the floor at the same time and kicked away with all the apparent acceleration of continental drift. As he twisted slowly through the air, Death said, without rancor,
"It won't work, you know. It's only natural that you should want to try, but it won't work."
Dreamlike, Mort drifted through a silent world. The bolt struck. Death brought his sword around in a double-handed swing that passed gently through the king's neck without leaving a mark. To Mort, spiraling gently through the twilight world, it looked as though a ghostly shape had dropped away. It couldn't be the king because he was manifestly still standing there, looking directly at Death with an expression of extreme surprise. There was a shadowy something around his feet, and a long way away people were reacting with shouts and screams.
"A good clean job," said Death. "Royalty are always a problem. They tend to want to hang on. Your average peasant now, he can't wait."
"Who the hell are you?" said the king. "What are you doing here?"
Guards. I demand..."
The insistent message from his eyes finally battered through to his brain. Mort was impressed. King Olerv had held on to his throne for many years and even when dead knew how to behave.
"Oh," he said. "I see. I didn't expect to see you so soon."
"Your Majesty," said Death, bowing. "Few do."
The king looked around. It was quiet and dim in this shadow world, but outside there seemed to be a lot of excitement.
"That's me down there, is it?"
"I'm afraid so, sire."
"Clean job. Crossbow, was it?"
"Yes. And now, sire, if you would..."
"Who did it?"
said the king. Death hesitated.
"A hired assassin from Ankh-Morpork," he said.
"Hmm.
Clever. I congratulate Stowe Hellet. And here's me filling myself with antidotes. No antidote to cold steel, eh? Eh?
Indeed not, sire.
The old rope ladder and fast horse by the drawbridge trick, eh?
So it would appear, sire, said Death, taking the king's shade gently by the arm. If it's any consolation, though, the horse needs to be fast.
Eh?
Death allowed his fixed grin to widen a little. I have an appointment with its rider tomorrow in Ankh, said Death. You see, he allowed the Duke to provide him with a packed lunch.
The king, whose eminent suitability for his job meant that he was not automatically quick on the uptake, considered this for a moment and then gave a short laugh. He noticed Mort for the first time.
"Who's this?" he said. "He dead too?"
"My apprentice," said Death, "who will be getting a good talking to before he's much older, the scallywag."
"Mort,"
said Mort automatically. The sound of their talking washed around him, but he couldn't take his eyes off the scene around them. He felt real. Death looked solid. The king looked surprisingly fit and well for someone who was dead. But the rest of the world was a mass of sliding shadows. Figures were bent over the slumped body, moving through Mort as if they were no more substantial than a mist. The girl was kneeling down, weeping.
"That's my daughter," said the king. "I ought to feel sad. Why don't I?"
"Emotions get left behind. It's all a matter of glands."
"Ah, that would be it, I suppose. She can't see us, can she?"
"No."
"I suppose there's no chance that I could..."
"None," said Death.
"Only she's going to be queen, and if I could only let her..."
"Sorry."
The girl looked up and threw Mort. He watched the Duke walk up behind her and lay a comforting hand on her shoulder. A faint smile hovered around the man's lips. It was the sort of smile that lies on sandbanks waiting for incautious swimmers.
"I can't make you hear me," Mort said. "Don't trust him."
She peered at Mort, screwing up her eyes. He reached out and watched his hands pass straight through hers.
"Come along, boy. No lallygagging."
Mort felt Death's hand tighten on his shoulder, not in an unfriendly fashion. He turned away reluctantly, following Death and the king. They walked out through the wall. He was halfway after them before he realized that walking through walls was impossible. The suicidal logic of this nearly killed him. He felt the chill of the stone around his limbs before a voice in his ear said,
"Look at it this way. The wall can't be there, otherwise you wouldn't be walking through it, would you, boy?"
"Mort," said Mort.
"What?"
"My name is Mort, or Mortimer," said Mort angrily, pushing forward.
The chill fell behind him.
"There. That wasn't so hard, was it?"
Mort looked up and down the length of the corridor and slapped the wall experimentally. He must have walked through it, but it felt solid enough now. Little specks of mica glittered at him.
"How do you do that stuff?" he said. "How do I do it? Is it magic?"
"Magic is the one thing it isn't, boy. When you can do it by yourself, there will be nothing more that I can teach you."
The king, who was considerably more diffuse now, said,
"It's impressive, I'll grant you. By the way, I seem to be fading."
"It's the morphogenetic field weakening," said Death.
The king's voice was no louder than a whisper.
"Is that what it is?"
"It happens to everyone. Try to enjoy it."
"How?"
Now the voice was no more than a shape in the air.
"Just be yourself."
At that moment, the king collapsed, growing smaller and smaller in the air, as the field finally collapsed into a tiny, brilliant pinpoint. It happened so quickly that Mort almost missed it. From ghost to mote in half second, with a faint sigh. Death gently caught the glittering thing and stowed it away somewhere under his robe.
"What's happened to him?" said Mort.
"Only he knows," said Death. "Come."
"My granny says that dying is like going to sleep," Mort added, a shade hopefully.
"I wouldn't know. I have done neither."
Mort took a last look along the corridor. The big doors had been flung back and the court was spilling out. Two older women were endeavouring to comfort the princess, but she was striding ahead of them so that they bounced along behind her like a couple of fussy balloons. They disappeared up another corridor.
"Already a queen," said Death approvingly. Death liked style.
They were on the roof before he spoke again.
"You tried to warn him," he said, removing Binky's nosebag.
"Yes, sir. Sorry."
"You cannot interfere with fate. Who are you to judge who should live and who should die?"
Death watched Mort's expression carefully.
"Only the gods are allowed to do that," he added. To tinker with the fate of even one individual could destroy the whole world. Do you understand? Mort nodded miserably.
Are you going to send me home? He said.
Death reached down and swung him up behind the saddle. Because you showed compassion? No. I might have done if you had shown pleasure. But you must learn the compassion proper to your trade.
What's that?
A sharp edge.